Hello and welcome to this Learning and Organizational Development podcast. I'm Will Plaskanka, manager of the Learning and Organizational Development Unit in the HR office on our Knoxville campus. We are presenting a series of podcast episodes designed to address topics that are important as employees think and reflect on the concept of career development. We have podcast episodes on the University of Tennessee application and recruitment process, writing cover letters, designing resumes, and interviewing. Please take a listen to any of these. We trust you will find the information valuable. So welcome, and thank you for being here. In today's episode, we have two guests from our recruiting unit to speak with us about resumes. With us today is Brooke Swart, executive recruiter. Brooke, welcome to you, and tell us, how long have you been with UT?
Hi, Will. Thank you for having me here. It's great to be here. I have been at the University of Tennessee for almost 6 years. It'll be 6 years in August. I'm also an alum of the university. I graduated in 1991 with my undergraduate degree and then came back and I graduated in 1997 with my master's degree. So it is wonderful to be a part of this university. I enjoy it tremendously. And what I'm excited about with this podcast is the fact that when we love our jobs, it doesn't feel so much like work. And that's how I feel about what I do. So I'm hoping that Anthony and I can perhaps offer a few words that you can take with you and help you as you figure out your journey, whether it be within the university or external. So thank you so much, Will, for inviting us to do this.
Well, you're welcome. And thank you for being with us. Thank you for your 6 years. And thank you for sharing your expertise in this moment. We also have with us Anthony Lanigan, a recruiting business partner here in our recruiting space, also in the HR office. Anthony, welcome to you. And tell us how long you've been with UT.
Thank you, Will. I've been with the University of Tennessee for 2 months, so definitely not as long as Brooke. I've been in higher education, though, since about 2018. And I completed my undergraduate and graduate degree at a private university near here. And I currently am an adjunct professor at those universities as well. So I teach in the communication department. So that helps us learn a little bit more about the writings of cover letters and resumes and that sort of thing. So I'm really excited to share some insight and hopefully leave each of you with a few takeaways to help build upon what your goals are.
All right. Well, Anthony, thank you for being here. Glad to have you. It's been nice working with you, even albeit just these first 60 days, but I know, and it sounds like you bring some great higher ed experience as well with you. So thank you for being here and sharing your expertise also. So as we think about resumes, as we begin to dig into this notion of what these are and what these should look like and how we should best serve ourselves, if you will, there are many things to think about. So let's just jump right in. The first thing I'd like to do is just kind of start basic at the foundational level. And I'd like you both to comment, please, and think about for everybody listening here and also myself included. Can you please give us an overview of really what's that purpose of the resume? What should it be designed to do for the applicant?
Well, I'll go first on that. So, you know, a resume's purpose is to introduce yourself. It's almost like a fact sheet. Resume is actually a French word that means summary. And I think that is a great way to talk about the purpose. It's going to give a potential employer a feel for your experience and skills in a concise format. That's the purpose. We're not looking at an encyclopedia of Brooke Swart's experience. It is a summary. And so those are the basic purpose that from my perspective, and Anthony has some great thoughts on that as well, I'm sure.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to look up a definition of what does that mean? And according to Indeed 2021, the goal of an overall purpose of a resume is to introduce yourself and your qualification and skills to an employer. And I think that's so accurate. You want to highlight your strengths and you want to highlight your steady employment history and demonstrate that all demonstrates the increased responsibility you have and promotions you have throughout your resume. writing. And so remembering that additional to everything about above, the true objective is you as the applicant, you're trying to sell yourself to an employer. So be sure, if you take anything away, be sure to be your biggest advocate. And I think that is what's so strong about a resume, is that you want to be your biggest advocate. And so don't sell yourself.
Yeah, thank you. I love the notion of thinking about it as a summary of your work history. And Anthony, also that notion of advocacy. We've said that type of thing in the past to some of the folks we've worked with, is who is your biggest advocate? And ultimately, that's yourself. So thinking about the resume in that context is really nice. And you both, I appreciate that kind of that pinpoint focused information about what that resume's purpose is, as opposed to making it something big and broad and bold and just wide reaching. We have one thing we really want to do and attack as we begin to think about that. So,
and Will, yeah. I wanted to add something that Anthony made me think of when he said advocate. A resume is basically you're selling yourself. And it's been my experience that people are humble at the core. And so what may seem like you're overstating and boasting from your perspective is not necessarily going to be what the employer sees, because they want to see what you've done. So dig in deep and think about the accomplishments that have been made in your career, and advocate for yourself and perhaps think about it from that perspective. Is if you're looking at a resume, what do you want to see? But advocate is perfect. Do not underestimate what you bring to the table for this position.
And to kind of pick up what you just said, Brooke, too, just to expand upon that, if you do have a hard time selling yourself, ask some of your colleagues what they think, what their ideas are, and ask for their input. Because I think that when you start hearing your colleagues speak about you and your work, it'll help bolster some ideas to where you can write that down on your resume and find that internal fire to be that advocate for yourself as well.
Agreed. Others can lift you up in that process and tell you things about yourself that they see that you think, oh, really? So I love that notion, Anthony.
Very nice. Thank you. Thank you both. Yeah. Overcome that humbleness and speak about who you are and what you bring. Thank you. Now, as we think about that and we think about what this summary looks like, and here's the question is I've heard some various ideas. There's different ideas about how long a resume should be. Is there some accepted standard that should be adhered to? Or can you describe at least some kind of a target length and why you would suggest this in each one of these particular, or any situation you may think about?
I'm going to let Anthony go first on that one. He and I have had many a conversation about it. So I'm letting Anthony take that one first.
Well, thank you, Brooke. I definitely think the length of a resume and really any information that you put on a resume are all subjective. And I would argue that there is no data that specifically paints a perfect picture on what is right or what is wrong. But I definitely think that composing your resume, tailor the content for the specific job that you're seeking. I think many applicants incorrectly assume that an all-inclusive list of skills and experience on a resume helps the employer or helps you with the employer, but it really doesn't. And so think about it for on the employer side of things. When you're reviewing candidates for a position, resumes with long lists require the employer to hunt and find relevant qualifications. So make the information easy to find. Keep your resume organized, especially if your resume is over one page. I think that if you could keep it to that one page limit, and I think that's best. But I understand that a lot of times people that have a vast career, they want to showcase and highlight and not sell themselves short. So going over that one page, I wouldn't stress too much about it. I'm not going to say that if you have one page resume and you go over, you're not going to get the job. I would be a liar if I said that. So definitely keep that information relevant on what you put on there and be intentional with what you put. If you had a vast career in, say, culinary, and you go into higher education and you start making a career for yourself in higher ed, I probably wouldn't put the culinary experience because it's no longer viable. But if you have a laundry list of accomplishments that from one industry and you want to showcase those, I definitely would take that into consideration of maybe making your resume a little bit longer than that one page. And then I'll pass it off to Brooke because I know she's got a little bit of a difference of opinion with me on that one, and that's fine. But go ahead, Brooke.
Well, I do agree with Anthony in that it can go for one page. I advise to try and keep it to two pages at the most. But if you, like he said, if you go over one page, don't stress out about it. It depends on where you are in your career. So early career, it's easy, you know, when you're getting ready to graduate college to try and put it into one page, that it shouldn't be an issue. Someone who's mid or perhaps a little bit later in their career, two pages may make more sense as long, like Anthony said, as long as the information is relevant, because you don't want to list the minutia of every position of every duty for every position. You're going to want to list only the bullet points that are aligned with the position requirements to show the depth and breadth of what you have. I think it's helpful for those that are more experienced to be able to say, hey, I've done this type of work in multiple positions. So I've got this different perspective from different industries or departments, whatever the case may be. Again, goes back to making sure that your bullet points are quality and relevant to the position. You know, I think about my first job out of college. I don't include that on my, well, I graduated in 1991. I'm not going that far back, but I wouldn't put it on there because it's not truly relevant to what I do now. So I'm of the mindset that two pages is perfectly acceptable. As long as everything on there is going to benefit you, and back to what we talked about, advocating yourself.
Thank you both. So if I'm hearing some understanding here, two pages, I wouldn't go past that. I think we're all in agreement that's like a firm hard no. But also within whatever the length is between that two and one, just being sure that everything you lay out is concise, and it isn't this big, huge laundry list, like Anthony said, that folks you're applying to have to kind of search for things, and making, as Brooke said, making sure those points are relevant to the position that you're applying for. Thank you both very much. I love that there's a little bit of a gray area in that space. I appreciate that. So along these same types of lines, and maybe we already know the answer to this question, but is there a certain date range to say, hey, you know, that's just too far back? There's no real need to bring that type or that far back experience. Is there a specific date range folks may be looking for? Again, any kind of accepted timeline or standard there?
I don't know if I would necessarily say that there's a standard. I definitely would encourage you not to show gaps in your employment. You really want to show that. Something I saw the other day, and I thought that was great, was somebody was a stay-at-home mother. And so she put that time that she was a stay-at-home mother on her resume. And I thought that was genius. What a way to demonstrate a time gap when you weren't employed somewhere. And so I encourage you to come up with unique scenarios like that, and don't be embarrassed by that. Be intentional when you put something like that and just own it, because it is what it is. But as far as a time, like Brooke said, I wouldn't put my first job on there, maybe not even my second job. I would focus on your career. And so being intentional with what you place on your resume is probably the best thing you can do. And if that means you're going back a decade, great. But if it means that you're going back 2 to 3 years, that's fine too. So just be intentional and keep the information as relevant as you can to the position in which you're applying for.
And I agree with Anthony. One thing not to worry about is, say you've had an example is that you've had two jobs and you've been at both jobs for 7, 8 years, for example. It's okay to go back that far, because you're showing, you know, on the plus side, you're showing your longevity and your stability in a role. And if an employer is looking for someone that has been in a role enough to truly understand what they're doing, then that's a benefit to them. So that's going back 14, 15 years, but in that case, it could be a definite selling point to the hiring authority.
Thank you. So again, back to that relevance moment and truly explaining, Anthony, as you said, you brought something new into our conversation in terms of gaps. If there are gaps in there, don't hesitate to, as you said, own it and share that information so it doesn't look like you just kind of checked out for a while, I guess, maybe is the other side is how that could appear.
And I agree with Anthony. Let's own it. Let's be real. Let's remember we're all human and things happen.
All right. So we've talked a little bit already about the purpose. We've talked about some notion of page limit and date range limits and things like that and dug into those. Now let's talk a little bit about what does it look like? What does the resume actually look like? So in this moment, I'm thinking about styles, colors, templates. So I've seen in my own experience many different versions of what resumes look like.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And some of them I go, oh, that looks pretty cool. And other ones I go, not so much. But how would you advise our listeners to proceed as they consider format or design elements in building their resume?
Sure. Style, I typically write a resume in a chronological order. So that means starting with your most recent work at top and working your way down the list. I think font is important. I think you want to keep your font between 10 and 12 point, be consistent throughout your resume. You don't want an array of fonts. That's not what we want to see. I think also thinking about fonts, and this is something that some people might not think about, but let's say you're newer into your career and you're a younger person or you've changed careers and now you're going into a new field. And so you don't have a lot of experience. So you might want to choose a larger font. So some of those larger fonts are like Georgia, Tahoma, or Verdana, and that will take up a little bit more space on your resume. So you're trying to fill that to make it to that one page. Or if you're somebody who has a long career and you're really trying to cram everything into that 1 to 2 pages, think about those smaller fonts that can take up a little bit less room rather. And that's, Cambria or Garamond or Book Antiqua. I know some people say, well, what about Times New Romans? Though that's a great font to use, it's what we use every single day. And so our eyes become accustomed to seeing it. And so looking at a different font, you might stand out a little bit more. You might be, it might catch the person's eye who's reading it. And so I would definitely recommend using a font that I just listed or go look up one of those fonts and check those out. I also would avoid, we haven't talked about this yet, but headshots. Some people like putting headshots on their resumes. Some don't. I would avoid putting headshots unless a career that you're entering in requires one to be added. But I think headshots can create biasness off the rip. And so I would just avoid using it altogether on that. And then colors. I think colors can be a great thing to add on resumes, but in taste. I would be very cautious about what colors you use. I would use those warmer colors like a navy blue or a maroon or a dark green, something that's subtle. I would definitely stay away from your yellows, your lime greens, your magentas, not to be the Debbie Downer, but they're very bright and they're just in your face. And that's just, though they might be memorable, but it might be for more of a negative connotation than a positive one. So I would definitely consider maybe not using color unless you want to, but I mean, it's just be intentional with how you use the color. I will say on a side note that if you are applying for a position that's not in higher ed or for the federal government, don't use color. Keep a traditional black and white resume. They won't accept it. And so you want to keep that in mind as well. Regarding templates, I think templates can be a great tool. There's so many different tools out there right now. You can Google resume templates, and there's a lot of great ones that you can purchase or design on Canva or even use on Microsoft Word. They've come a long, long way. My only caution is that the template that you choose, make sure that you have the information that template shows. You can get these nice templates, but if you don't have a LinkedIn account, if you don't have that job history that they're kind of demonstrating on that specific template, then it's not going to work for you. So find a template that meets your needs and go from there. Brooke, what suggestions would you have on format that you think that would benefit our listeners?
Sure. I like to think of it, and this goes back to the length of your resume. If you want to keep it one page, this might be beneficial. But I like to think of a resume, if you look at your sheet of paper, that is your real estate. So the more space you take up with lines, columns, et cetera, just consider how much is that going to limit the space on the document. That's one thing that to think about as you build your resume. And I was just looking in my notes. I don't want to repeat what Anthony was saying. A couple of other things with your format is just like I said, keep best use of the document. The other to Anthony's point about the colors, remember that there are some applicant tracking systems that won't pick that up, and it could move around. I've seen documents not come into the format that it was intended, just from the way that the applicant tracking system could read it. The other aspect, I'm just looking here, excessive graphics. That can be quite distracting, so be careful about that. I remember seeing a resume where someone had put the logo of every company they've ever worked for. And again, that goes back to perhaps the system won't take it, or if you're applying for a federal government job or the like, it could be a detriment. The main exception for excessive, graphics, I don't want to say excessive. No one wants that. If you are in a creative field, then that is where there's an exception, because it's expected to that they need to see that. That's your introduction to them. So if you're in the creative field, that is how you introduce yourself. So I would put that as maybe a pretty big exception to the rule. Let's see. The templates are important. One thing as far as format is concerned, Anthony and I were talking about this the other day, is that think about at the top of your, at your header format, you don't need to put your address on there anymore. You can just put your name, your phone number, your contact email, and then of course you can put your LinkedIn. I recommend putting your LinkedIn. Just make sure that your LinkedIn is updated with a professional photo with relevant information, because LinkedIn can give a little bit more than a resume can. Some people put their Twitter on there, and just make sure that your Twitter is professional and that you're not tweeting potentially controversial opinions with politics or whatever the case may be. You'd think sports wouldn't be, but it is, or it can be, right? So just think about that and what your brand, your image looks like online with regard to those types of social media.
Another thing to add too is your high school. Some people that are entering into into the workforce that might not have a lot of education experience, I think once you've completed your associate's degree or your undergraduate degree, there's no reason to list your high school diploma anymore. It's kind of been trumped. Now that kind of changes when you get into you're completing an undergraduate degree and a graduate degree. I think I would list both because you could have gotten to two different areas of study. And so once you've made that next step, I think removing the high school off your resume, there's just no reason to keep it on there anymore. But one thing I do want to share about formatting is just consider this a branding for yourself. This is professional branding for you. So remember that when you're creating these pieces, your cover letter, your resume, your LinkedIn, that these are all professional devices to help your career grow. And so making sure that it looks professional, that it checks those boxes, basically. Ask for an opinion, ask a colleague, ask somebody, hey, does this look right? Is this professional? trust but verify everything when it comes down to these things, because it's just going to help you go further. So that would be my another recommendation I would say regarding the format.
And then a lot of questions, some people ask about objectives. Anthony and I were talking about this as well. It's optional. Neither one of us are big fans of objectives because it takes up space. And if you want to tell part of your motivation behind why you're applying, you can do that in a cover letter, which is a whole different topic and podcast. But just think about that. Objectives are awkward at times. And so use that space for something that has more quality to it. And back to the high school, if someone doesn't have any college and they want to leave their high school, they put their high school on there, I don't recommend, I think Anthony agrees, don't put the date of graduation on there. There are people with bias that maybe they haven't checked and could affect your age. No matter what your age, it can still affect perspective. So that's another format, I guess content, if you will, but something to think about as you construct it.
That's a lot of stuff that you need to think about. This has been a long conversation just around this one particular moment of format. So some of the things I heard that I'll repeat and let me know if I go left or right is thinking about the font and making it something a little bit different than Times New Roman. So it does stand out a little bit. If you use colors, Anthony, I think you said warm colors. So try and stay away from those big, bright, vibrant colors. But I'll relate that back to what Brooke said, is if there is a moment in a creative field where your resume to some degree becomes a part of your resume, here's what the kind of creative work I can do by creating this resume, then maybe there's some space for that. I think we said stay away from headshots unless it's really going to be a part of the work or you're required to submit a headshot at some point in time. And just this notion again of advocacy for yourself, ask for opinions of others. Maybe if you compose something or develop something, get some feedback on it, how it reads, how it presents, because ultimately that's what you're doing, is you're creating this brand for yourself. And the resume is a part of that particular moment for you as an applicant for any position you hope to aspire to or hope to gain. A lot of things to think about as it relates to all that. All right. Is there anything now, with all that, I'm going to ask you to dig just a touch deeper. If we're talking about a university employee, University of Tennessee employee looking for another position within the university, is there anything specific to our situation or what you found to be advisable for folks, you know, current employees of UT wanting to gain a new position with UT?
I actually have something that I tell anyone who comes to me for advice, and it's especially true for people who are external to the university applying. Just keep in mind that due to equity purposes, when the position announcement lists its minimum qualifications, everyone who puts their resume in has to have every single minimum qualification listed. So if they do not, then they cannot be considered unless the hiring authority goes back and modifies the position description. So that can at times feel be rejected for jobs. And so as you are looking, just make sure that you meet all of the minimum qualifications so you don't feel that feeling if you're not selected to move forward. It's not personal. It's just that is what is required at the University of Tennessee in order to comply with our equity evaluation efforts. That's what speaks to me. And cover letters are also extremely important here at the University of Tennessee. It asks for a cover letter. Make sure that you really think about what you want to say in that cover letter. And that's important as well when I think about application materials. But back to the resume, that's what stands out to me the most. Anthony, what do you think?
Yeah, Brooke, you really hit the nail on the head. I don't have much to really add to that. I support everything Brooke says and what she just said regarding it, those pieces. I would just say, just be really cognizant of what the position is asking you for. So if they are asking you for that that cover letter, or if they are asking you for three references, if they are asking you for the resume, make sure that you check mark every one of those things. Don't just sit there and think that that's an optional thing. Complete what's being asked, and make sure that that it's submitted. And just make sure you have those minimum qualifications at least. And that goes back to just being intentional and methodical when you're writing these things. I always would encourage having the job posting up as you're tweaking your resume. I think we're getting a little ahead, so I'll kind of park that for right now. But that's something I would just pay attention to, be mindful about, and again, like what Brooke said, it's nothing personal. It's just the process.
All right, thank you. So as we've talked about already, the notion of what's on your resume obviously should be relevant to the position you're applying for. But are there examples where you've seen where folks may be able to, I guess, use language within their own or specifics? How do you relate maybe something I've done that I think maybe translates, but somehow the words are different? Is there ways to think through some of those things so you can truly demonstrate in your resume that you have responsibilities, or you had responsibilities and have skills, even though they might not perfectly align?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start this one. I definitely would encourage looking for those keywords, those job descriptive words, to incorporate them on your resume. So as you're thinking about your job duties and what you do, and you're looking at the position, though they might be different words, they might be adjectives of one another. So use the language that they used. And the reason why I'm saying that it's because those are those eye-popping words that the hiring manager or the hiring committee are going to look for. And so that goes back to what I said earlier about being intentional about what you place on your resume. That's one of those things. So I believe a resume is a framework of your professional brand that always needs to be tweaked and honed and skilled and modified. And it's those key words and those brief little descriptions that you're trying to change. One thing on language that I would try to recommend people to do is when you're organizing your relevant skills listed on the job advertisement, I think that you should also add like a little small blurb of why that skill is strong for you. So for example, if you say, oh, I'm a strong communicator, don't just stop there. Explain why you're a strong communicator. I think anybody can arbitrarily list some of their strong skills, but take that a little further. Why is that skill strong for you? So like I said earlier, the strong communicator, so ask why. So put a little thing underneath that says, I communicate daily with customers while performing my daily functions, or I read and write Spanish fluently. This gives the employer a little bit more understanding of how this skill is strong for you, or how you're able to utilize those skills, than just arbitrarily creating a list. I also think statistics and number figures go a long way depending on what role you're in. In my previous career, I was in enrollment management. And so talking about if I were to maybe apply for another job in enrollment, talking about what the industry standard is for students going through the process of becoming a student at that particular school. So were you above industry standard? Were you at industry standard? Share those figures. If you work with a certain dollar amount, if you're an accountant or you're in accounting position or something that utilizes money, talk about how much money you use. Talk about the funds that you use. I don't think any of that is proprietary information. So just share that information, share how many accounts that you have. I think that helps paint a better picture than just saying that you work with this amount. Put those numbers on there. I think seeing those numbers, seeing those figures, that's what stands out against all the words that are on your resume. And so it doesn't become convoluted. It sticks right out. What do you say, Brooke?
Yeah, I agree. When able to quantify, I always like to use Will's department as an example. You know, I developed and facilitated 100 professional development training courses, and it served 500 people, you know, so in 2020 or whatever the case may be, especially 2020, right? Well, you did a lot of that.
Yes, we did.
Yes, whenever possible, use figures, quantify. If you came in under budget on something, that's critical, particularly like if you're applying for a position that has capital projects, and then coming under budget is and within the time frame is critically important and a feather in the cap. So those are a few things to think about, but yes, that quantifying, you're really showing how you can add value when you do that. You were talking about words. So Anthony was talking about using the similar language as in the position description. So there are some applicant tracking systems out there that search for keywords. So if they've entered in some of the keywords from the position description, that tracking system will search for those particular keywords. So that's just another added layer that to consider. It's back to what Anthony was saying about looking at that language and really thinking about what they say they're looking for.
So being intentional always is a thing I keep coming back to as I talk with both of you about this. Those words you're actually using, how well do they align with the words that are in the position description? And are they aligning? And can you make connections to that, understanding that is truly what folks are looking for? And that's why they've taken the time to put those things in the PD. They're being very intentional as well to think about, this is what I'm looking for. So as an applicant, I need to be very intentional as well to make sure that they connect in some way. And then providing that little bit of extra nominal real estate, as Brooke calls it, in the resume to say, I'm a great communicator and this is why. Or I've facilitated programs. How many have you done? And I've led a budget or managed a budget of whatever that number happens to be, to really give that just that moment of extra clarity so folks really have a better understanding of who you are and how your experience correlates with what they're looking for.
Absolutely.
Very nice. Very nice. So the last thing I'm really interested in or thinking about, and we've touched on this, I think, a little bit already, and I don't want to take away from another one of our podcasts, which talks specifically about cover letters. But if there was a way you could characterize the relationship between a resume and a cover letter, how would you do that without digging into what a cover letter needs to look like?
Your resume are the facts, and the cover letter can give add some context around those facts in the form of for lack of a better word, a story, your story. And that is maybe oversimplified, but referencing experience in that the position announcement emphasizes is good, but not needing to go into detail because then you've got your fact sheet in your resume. But that's for me, you know, you've got the resume that's going to give that information, but then you have the opportunity in a cover letter to speak to not just that you're qualified for the position, but what you're going to bring, the value add that you will bring to the position and why you're excited about that next challenge.
Yeah, I think the connection from the resume to the cover letter is the information you want to direct the employer's attention to. So that whether that's expanding on your transferable skills or some accomplishments that you had at your previous employer or anything that you want to highlight further, that your resume, that's just too much to put on your resume. Whether that's knowledge or experience or both, I think it's just, again, telling that story of what your accomplishments are and how you can use those accomplishments to meet the goals or objective at the job that you're applying for.
Thank you. Thank you. So that space where you can, again, without getting into format too much, that space where you can just expand on those key relevant statements you've made in your resume and thinking about, okay, this is, so my resume should really be, as I think one of you referred to, the facts. This is who I am. This is why. This is the experience I have. And then as it relates to the relationship to the cover letter, that's where you can expand on that information a little bit and kind of maybe share some experience and talk a little bit about what that brings to the potential employer. Very nice. Thank you all. Well, I think we've hit on most of the high points in terms of resumes and what they should look like. And, you know, we're talking about their purpose and their format and ranges and all kinds of things. So I appreciate what you've both brought to this moment and shared with me and shared with the folks who will be listening to this. I'd like to ask you if there's any other closing comments either one of you have in terms of like a key takeaway you want to walk, you know, want these folks who listen to this to walk away with. These are Anthony's words or these are Brooke's words around what a resume, what to think about as you begin this process of creating your own resume.
You know, I think just some the takeaways that I would want you to any listener to leave with would just be being mindful and intentional with what you put on there. Be sure that it's meaningful information and that it's something that is trying to build upon your brand and being your best advocate, because no one else in this world is going to be more of an advocate for you than for yourself. So that would be what I would want each of you to take away from.
I don't know that I could say much more. You know, just make sure it's concise and professional in everything. The elements of it, remain professional, advocate for yourself. You are your best advocate, like Anthony said. Let others contribute. And remember that resumes are subjective. The way that you write your resume is who you are, uniquely you. And to just remember that there's a lot of gray in resumes, and hopefully this information will help the listeners to understand that there's gray there, but there's a framework as well.
All right. Well, thank you both so very much. Brooke Swart, executive recruiter in our recruiting team here in the HR office, and Anthony Lanigan, one of our recruiting business partners, also in our recruiting office here in HR. I want to thank you both for your time and your expertise today. And I appreciate it very much. I've learned a couple of things along the way, and I thank you for that. And I know the folks who listen will have benefited from this greatly. So we appreciate your help. We appreciate your investment in this time and your investment in our employees and anybody who listens to today's moment. So thank you
for the opportunity and the invitation to participate.
Yeah, likewise, I appreciate that.
Thank you all for spending some time with us today in this Learning and Organizational Development podcast. As a reminder, I am Will Plaskanka, the manager of our Learning and Organizational Development unit in the HR office on our Knoxville campus. Please feel free to visit all the podcast episodes we have ready for you. These are designed to be in the moment as you need them. Development opportunities, and continue in this series, please, if you would, as we continue to learn about writing cover letters, the University of Tennessee application and recruitment process, and also a moment talking about interviewing techniques. Thank you all very much, and I hope you have a great day.